Scott Hughes, Rick Horton.
This is a season like no other.
Unbelievable start from Hamilton.
He's just insane.
Oh, they touched! Verstappen is into the lead! Come on!
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello there, I am Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And we are the two soft compounds off the back of the Australian Grand Prix. And it was quite an exciting race. It's been very interesting to see how the teams are kind of panning out a couple of races in now. Because usually, you know, some teams do very well the first race or two and then it kind of changes the order a little bit. And I guess the take home from this race for me was the McLaren's looking a lot better. The Mercedes looking slightly better as well. But some of the teams still struggling down at the bottom. And the Aston Martin, for example, had an absolutely shocking race weekend again.
Yes, it's obvious that the Mercedes-powered cars are more suited, and I like the way it's panning out, and we can see it for ourselves, they are more suited to quick, smooth running racetracks. So when it comes to, you know, sharp corners where they have to slow down and then they have to get back on the traction to speed up again after a slow corner, not great, because those corners were present in Bahrain and in Saudi, but in Australia, where it's more of a faster flowing circuit, the Mercedes-powered teams are doing better. So that gives us an indication that they will always do better on fast flowing tracks, which I thought was really, really interesting. You've got the problems with Aston Martin. Some people saying that, you know, Sebastian Vettel is already at the end of his tether with the team. He's not happy with the way it's being run, and he is now not happy with the way they are supplying him with a car that just isn't reliable. And, of course, we've got the reliability issues of the Red Bull.
Yeah, it's fascinating as well. Vettel's a good example, isn't it, where it's wrong team, wrong time once again. We spoke about this last week, but, you know, he's gone from a mega successful Red Bull and winning his four world titles on the bounce with Red Bull, you know, massively successful young career. Then he went to Ferrari, and obviously that's a great move, turning to Ferrari and going to a team like Ferrari, but he did it at the wrong time when they were off form. So he's left Ferrari just as they come on form, and now he's gone to Aston Martin just as they go off form. And so he's had a bit of a shocking sort of career move, hasn't he? And you can see why this gets these guys frustrated, because it makes him look like a very average driver being in that car. But he is, of course, a four-time world champion, which is, you know, one of the greatest of all times on paper. So it must be hard for him. The team, like you say, is being run in an interesting way. Lots of people saying that, you know, the owner of the team is getting too hands-on and making too many decisions. Lots of negative feedback around that team. And, you know, Vettel seems like a kind of very upbeat, you know, positive guy, and I can see that this would get him frustrated. Thing is, where does somebody like Vettel go? Because, you know, Vettel's got the same sort of problem that Ricciardo's got now, which is they just look very average in their cars. You know, Ricciardo's being outdriven by Lando every weekend almost, and, you know, although they had a much better weekend this weekend, just gone, the McLarens, you know, it is an average-looking car, but he's looking really average, Ricciardo, as is Vettel. And where do these guys then go? Because, you know, you're only as good as your last race. You're only as good as your last season. And on paper, they don't look like that great an option as a driver for a team to take on, do they?
Yeah, exactly. And the thing that fascinates me as well this year is the Ferrari team, because last year it looked as though Carlos Sainz had got to grips with the Ferrari last year and was giving Charles Leclerc a really decent run for his money. Mm. And then this year, it seems to be the polar opposite. It seems that, you know, Carlos is really struggling. In Australia, we saw him make error after error during practice and qualifying, and then during the race when he put it on the gravel. Charles Leclerc is running away with the championship almost. And I know it's only been three races, but, you know, there's a lot of points to be gained in three races. With two DNFs from Max, he's going to struggle to catch up with Charles Leclerc, even if he has reliability for the rest of the season now. And Carlos Sainz, I think, it just seems to be paling into comparison compared to Charles. And I just don't know why that is this year.
Yeah, it's obviously the car is much more suited to Charles, isn't it, to drive, and Carlos has struggled with this new car, but I think he's now got inside his own head as well, and he's flapping and stressing that he's not as good as Charles, and he's obviously watching Charles win all these races and qualify at the front and starts the race at the front, and he's driving very, very, very well. And that must be a bit of a mental game for him, where he's kind of like, you know, I need to be up there, I need to be winning races, and he's obviously aware as well that, you know, at this point of the season, if they can win as many races as they can, you know, even if Carlos is second every race, you know, he's right in it still. He's well up there with the points. It only takes one crash or one not finish for Charles, and he's back in the contention for the championship. So he's aware of all that. So I think when he has a season or a couple of races like he has so far, he gets inside his own head, and then it's kind of spiraling, isn't it? And it's making it worse for him. And I think this is the problem that Danny Ric had as well. You know, at their start when he joined that McLaren team, he just couldn't match Lando, and they get inside their own head, and it causes them more and more issues. And Danny kind of got it together, didn't he, the second half of the season? He won a race obviously last year, and he got it all together. And it seems like this year it's sort of gone back to square one again a little bit, where Lando's come out ahead of him and he's driving the car better. And I think they're all just struggling a little bit. But it's very much two teams, isn't it? It's either you're brilliant with this car or you're struggling with this car. You know, some of the great drivers from last year are really struggling with these new cars. And then other drivers that were very average last year have got in these new ones and gone, yeah, this is a bit of me, this, and off they've driven. And I mean, Charles just looks tremendous this year so far, doesn't he?
Yeah, it really does. And if you compare it to last season, you know, you'd have thought that Carlos Sainz had the upper hand in the Ferrari team and that his confidence was moving forward. It just shows you what a difference a year makes and what a difference the car makes, obviously, because it's vastly different this year. Charles Leclerc has adapted to it instantly. Carlos Sainz just hasn't. And I think three races in now, he's going to fall into the role of supporting number two driver, isn't he? You know, because he's going to be the one that's given the team orders. Okay, make sure you let Charles past. Make sure you defend so that you can protect Charles. All that sort of stuff, which is the last thing Carlos Sainz wants, because, like I say, a year ago, he was challenging to be lead driver in that Ferrari team. What's going on with Red Bull? You know, Perez gets another podium this weekend, which is good for him. Max Verstappen, another powertrain issue with this Red Bull powertrain. Max is now saying he's not even thinking about defending his world title because they need to sort their issues out. There's no happiness in that Red Bull camp at the moment, is there?
Yeah, it's a frustrating one because it's a very good car when it's going, and when it's running, it's a very fast car. It's probably the fastest on the track overall package-wise. But yeah, like the Ferrari's just making it look very average because it's got so many reliability issues. And again, you know, Perez was not struggling last year. I thought Perez had a very good season last year, but he wasn't anywhere near on a par with Max last year. Whereas this year, so far, I feel like he has been. You know, he's been qualifying a lot better. That was always his Achilles heel, wasn't it? He didn't qualify that great, but he would race very well. But I feel like this year he's qualifying better and racing very well as well. But yeah, it's just interesting that Max is having all the issues. Reliability is all going the wrong way for Max, and Perez is doing all right out of it at the moment. But even that, you look at the points on the board, and the two Red Bull guys and Red Bull as a team are really, really struggling because they've just, you know, they've had so many DNFs. Obviously, Perez had a DNF as well, not in this race, but he's had one this season, and it's just not great, is it? The reliability. Obviously, they've taken over the Honda engine. It's a very fast engine. It's a very decent engine, but it's got a lot of issues. And they reckon it's separate issues. You know, there was whatever it was in the last race. They don't think it was the same thing. This seemed more like a hydraulics thing, didn't it? Where they were saying, I won't say the exact words he said, but he basically said on the radio that it's weeing hydraulics all over the track, wasn't it? So whatever went wrong on this race, you know, it was kind of like, and you could hear it in Max's voice when he did the radio call. It was very much kind of like, oh, here we go again. Not a lot I can do about this. I'm pulling over, guys. And, you know, it's interesting to hear a lot of the drivers very downbeat, but I'm surprised because the power unit hasn't been evolved that much is the gist I'm getting this year. So I'm surprised we're having so many issues with them so far.
Yeah, it reminds me of the time that Red Bull had the Renault engine in the back and you know, Max was on the radio considering, oh, here we go again, boys. You know, the power's gone. I'm just looking at the points after three races. Charles Leclerc on 71 points. His nearest challenger is George Russell in second place on 37. That's a massive gap between first and second. Then Carlos Sainz on 33, Perez on 30, Hamilton on 28, and Max Verstappen in sixth place in the driver's standing at the moment on 25 points. Just quite incredible. And if you go down to the drivers who haven't scored any points yet, Sebastian Vettel, Nicholas Latifi, who seems to be crash happy this season, Lance Stroll and Mick Schumacher, Alex Albon and Zhou are on the scoreboard, which is good. And so is Fernando Alonso with 2 points. And I thought Fernando Alonso had the potential at the Australian Grand Prix to get on the front row in qualifying, but then had that lack of steering input, which was blamed on hydraulics, I think, that put him into the wall.
Yeah, they seem to be having very similar issues to the Red Bull boys, don't they? Where, you know, they've got this great car that's very fast and should be up there most races, but they are having engine issues and reliability issues. And like you say, it was a very strange crash from Alonso. When it happened, I thought, that's very un-Alonso. And then obviously when he said it was a hydraulic thing and he couldn't turn the car, then that made a lot more sense, because he's not the kind of driver that has an accidental crash. And if he does, it's in practice rather than in qualifying or the race. You know, it's very rare you see a lot of mistakes from Alonso. So I was quite surprised at that. But like I say, it was car related. But the Alpine, you know, it looks like a good package. It looks like it could be up there. Could very well be best of the rest if they can get the reliability sorted out, which at the moment they can't. And this, I think, is why Mercedes are kind of sneaking in the back door a little bit with second in the constructors, because, you know, the reliability is all right. The car seems an absolute dog. I think Lewis Hamilton described it as a rattlesnake. He said it just kind of snaps on you at the last minute. He said, you know, you'll be driving along, everything's great, and then all of a sudden it snaps, and it's a very kind of snap happy car, which as a driver, that's the last thing you want, isn't it? You want a car that a very predictable car that you know what's going to happen. You want to go into a corner and know that you can catch a slide if needs be. And it sounds like the Mercedes is the opposite of that. And again, frustrating for Hamilton, I guess, that it looks like George Russell's kind of got to grips with the car a little bit better. And is this because Hamilton's had such a great car for the last 7 or 8 seasons?
Yeah.
He's not had to, you know, he's not had to drive around a bad car, has he? It's been ages. Probably the McLaren was the last time he had a bad car. So, you know, he's not really had to drive around these issues, whereas George Russell has. George Russell's been driving around a lot of issues in the Williams. So is he just a bit more sort of prepped for that and Hamilton's struggling more?
Yeah, there was a couple of pundits that were saying that just after the Australian Grand Prix, saying, well, you know, George has ragged the death out of the Williams car for several seasons because it was a very poor car, but he always got the best out of it. And now he's gone to Mercedes, where he thought he was going to get a smooth ride with a brilliant car, but he's facing similar problems. So based on his experience, he's able to drag the best of a poor car out of the Mercedes, which is perhaps why he's doing better than Hamilton. I mean, I was fascinated as well that the Ferrari car, when I was watching qualifying with Charles Leclerc, that Ferrari is porpoising worse than any other car on the circuit. But they seem to be able to, you know, still get brilliant fast last lap times out of it. But as for comfort for the drivers, I mean, they are bouncing all over the place. Apparently, they have an upgrade in Imola, which is going to sort that out. One thing that was interesting for me was that the only team who didn't bring any upgrade parts to the Australian Grand Prix was Mercedes. And they said they need to get on top of the issues before they can start upgrading, because if they go down the upgrade route and they haven't sorted out the fundamental issue of the car, they could be making it worse in the long term. So they want to sort out the fundamental issue they have and then start upgrading based on improvement, not on just patching up what already isn't working.
Yeah, and fascinating as well that, you know, you're looking at all these issues that they're all having, and Mercedes, you know, they just genuinely don't seem to know what's wrong with that car. And, you know, that's another issue, isn't it, where you think to yourself, well, hang on, up until now, every year we've been absolutely fine with this car, and we've been able to, you know, we've said it before, they'll have an issue and a week later they've got a way of dealing with that issue and they've sorted it and the car's great and it's back on top again, and we're like, oh, here we go again, Mercedes are great. But this year they just don't seem to know what the problems are, and you know, you can't sort a problem when you don't know what the problem is. And that's why they're kind of scratching their head a little bit at Mercedes. I think they're kind of looking at that car going, well, where do we start, you know, what do we do? And like you say, the porpoising in the Ferrari was absolutely unbelievable, but it doesn't seem to be slowing them down, does it? That the Ferrari package this year just seems to be absolutely beautiful, proper sweet spot.
Yep, without a doubt. Just a bit of housekeeping for you, by the way. We're not here on the podcast next week, so this episode is going to be our review of Australia and our look forward to Imola, which happens in just over a week's time, when we finally get to Europe, which is normally when the teams bring substantial upgrades. And of course, we're living with the cost cap. There's a couple of teams already that have asked if they could breach the cost cap, because is it AlphaTauri that are almost at the engine limit? I think it is. They're almost at the engine limit. They've used two engines. They're only allowed 3 per season. They've now used 2 power units, and they're asking the FIA if they can, you know, make an exception for them to breach the cost cap. Only 3 races in, this is a bit of a worry.
Yeah, and see, the other teams immediately are going to not want that, because if they allow that, it's like, where does that stop if they start allowing them to have more engines than the rest of them? But it's going to be an interesting season, because we've seen already lots of reliability issues. There's obviously a lot more to come. And if, like you say, if AlphaTauri are struggling three races in with their engines, you know, where are we going to be at 23 races? So yeah. It's going to be, you know, you could a team like AlphaTauri could end up, you know, not finishing 10 of the Grand Prix that are coming up, which is crazy when you think about it. But without a doubt, reliability is going to show its ugly face throughout the season, I think. And I think the only thing so far is Ferrari doesn't seem to have had any issues at all. Their cars just seem absolutely bulletproof so far. I'm sure they will have some issues, but as it stands at the moment, absolutely bulletproof. So Ferrari just, you know, looking great at the moment. But and Charles, like I say, he's just got to grips with that car. I always knew he was a good driver, but he has looked a little bit average on some seasons when that Ferrari's not been the best of cars. You know, give him a car like they've done this year. Absolutely tremendous what he's doing, you know. And he's the opposite of Carlos, where he's got all the confidence. He's just flying along. He's driving that car like an absolute dream at the moment. And the package of Charles Leclerc and that Ferrari is just unbeatable at the moment.
Well, he wasn't with us last week because sadly he was suffering with COVID, but I'm glad to say he's better now. Let's get the stats and facts from the Australian Grand Prix with our good friend Nicky from At Lights Out.
Leclerc joins the Grand Slam Club. Melbourne has three new faces on its podium, and Albon scores from last on the grid. Here are the top statistics from the 2022 Australian Grand Prix. Charles Leclerc took Ferrari's first pole at the Australian Grand Prix since 2007 and became the first driver other than Lewis Hamilton or Sebastian Vettel to take pole at Albert Park since Jenson Button in 2009. Leclerc went on to win the race, becoming the first Albert Park pole sitter to go on and win since Hamilton in 2015. Having taken pole, won the race, set the fastest lap and led every lap, Leclerc became the 26th driver to record a Grand Slam in Formula 1. Leclerc is the first Ferrari driver to record a Grand Slam since Fernando Alonso at the 2010 Singapore Grand Prix. Recording the fastest lap for the third race in a row, Leclerc becomes the first driver to set the fastest lap at three consecutive races since Lewis Hamilton did so at the 2014 Italian, Singapore and Japanese Grand Prix. Emerson Fittipaldi in 1973 is the only other driver to have taken the fastest lap at the three opening races of the year. Sergio Perez and George Russell joined Leclerc on the Australian Grand Prix podium. All three drivers recorded their first Albert Park top three finish. It's the first time since 1997 that all three podium finishers recorded their first Melbourne podium in the same race. Meanwhile, 2022 is the first time since 2013 that three different teams have finished on the Australian Grand Prix podium. This was only the second F1 race which a Ferrari driver has won, with a Red Bull driver second and a Mercedes driver third. The only other time it's happened was at the 2018 United States Grand Prix. After completing almost the entire race on a single set of tyres, Alex Albon picked up a point in 10th place. It was the first time Williams have scored in Australia since Felipe Massa's 6th place in 2017. Albon became the first driver to score at Albert Park, having started 20th on the grid. But while Albon is the first driver to score from 20th, Pedro de la Rosa recorded a better result in 2002. He finished 8th before the position awarded any points. And finally, back to Leclerc, who leads the championship by 34 points after the Australian Grand Prix. Nico Rosberg is the only driver to have had a larger points lead after the first three races of a season. He led by 36 points after the 2016 Chinese Grand Prix. Leclerc's current lead is larger than the lead that any driver had after any Grand Prix in the 2021 season.
Thank you, Nicky. You can follow him, of course, across the race weekends. At Lights Out is where you can find him on Twitter. All the stats and facts across the race weekends. Some brilliant stuff, as always. And of course, like you say, we head to Europe next. It always changes when we get to Europe because they bring a lot of upgrades. The teams... when they have these big fly away races, you know, they don't bring any upgrades because of the expense of it all. So once we get back to Europe, it's cheaper to do that. So lots of upgrades come in. We should see some changes in some of the cars. As I say, the McLaren looked a lot better, as did the Mercedes in Australia. So it's going to be interesting if they bring any upgrades and make those cars look better. I don't see how the Ferrari can get a lot better at the moment, but Red Bull obviously have a lot of reliability issues. They need to sort them out as well. And of course, Imola is the first of the Italian races that we've got this year, and it's the first of our little sprint races that we have. Is there three of them again, I think, this year, isn't there?
Three this season, yes. So Imola is the first one. They've changed the rules slightly on the sprint race, which makes it, I think, more interesting, because of course the sprint race last season decided the grid for the main race, but it's a little bit different in the rules this time round. And the calendar's a bit interesting, isn't it? Because we go, normally when we get to Europe, you think, well, we're in Europe for a good long while now. Normally we were in Europe until the Canadian Grand Prix, which is traditionally after Silverstone. So we were in Europe until the summer, but this time, of course, we're not. We're in Imola for one race, and then we go to Miami for the new race on a Formula One season. So you would have thought, in terms of teams upgrading components, then Imola is a really important one, because they upgrade now and probably can't do that much for Miami. So it's all about getting the upgrades correct for Imola and taking them forward to Miami. As you pointed out, it's much, much cheaper for the teams to do those upgrades in a European race because of transport costs and everything else than it is on a flyaway. So it's going to be interesting to see what the teams bring to Imola, isn't it? You know, we've already heard that Ferrari reckon they've sorted out their porpoising, and they will be sorting that out for Imola. Be interesting to see what Mercedes bring, having not upgraded the car since the start of the season.
Yeah, an important race for Ferrari as well, because they're on their home turf. So if they can win the race and do what they've been doing the last couple of races, they are going to get a massive reception from the Tifosi. But yeah, like you say, it's going to be very interesting to see what the teams do in Europe, what upgrades they bring, who kind of wins that battle. But yeah, like you say, we go Italy, we go then to the United States, then back to Spain, then Monaco, then we go back to Azerbaijan, then Canada, then back to Great Britain, then Austria. So it's very much kind of flyaway race back to Europe, flyaway race back to Europe, a couple of Europe races back to flyaway. So it's a very mixed season this year as well. So that's going to be interesting how the teams cope with that. Because, you know, like you say, if they bring upgrades to Imola, do they stick with them for Miami? Do they go back to the old spec for Miami? You know, what happens? I guess each team will be different.
And we saw the Mercedes-powered cars seem to do better on these sort of fast-flowing tracks. Imola's pretty fast-flowing, apart from the one slow hairpin towards the back of the circuit. And then you've got the chicane towards the end of the lap, which slows the cars down quite a lot. But apart from that, it's fairly fast, Imola, isn't it, and free-flowing. So let's hope the Mercedes-powered cars can make more gains when they face their first race in Europe. Predictions then, Scott, for the Imola Grand Prix?
I mean, you can't rule Charles Leclerc out at the moment. I do think Perez and also Max and also Carlos are all itching, chomping at the bit to do well. I think Carlos is going to do well. I can just see Carlos getting either a pole or a second on the grid, and I think he's due either a win or a second place. He's got to have some luck come his way soon. You can't rule Charles Leclerc out. And again, if Max has the car behind him and the engine doesn't give up this time, you can't rule Max out either. So I'm going to say a good race for Ferrari because it's their home turf. I think they'll be just putting a little bit extra in. So I think I'm going to go for a Charles Leclerc on pole and a Charles Leclerc win. I'm going to say Max second and Carlos third.
Okay. I think it's almost now or never to get Max Verstappen's World Championship defence underway. And what I mean by that is, if they can sort the reliability issues out for Imola and he has a good, strong race and puts it, you know, on the front row in qualifying and then gets a first or a second, I think he's off to the races, if you know what I mean. If they have another issue or a DNF or a reliability problem during any part of the race weekend, I think it could be curtains for Max looking at defending his title. I know we're only four race weekends in, but I think that's the reality of Formula One and the way the points work and everything else. So I think this is a make or break drive for Max Verstappen's championship defence this coming weekend, or for the Imola weekend, which is in a week and a half. And I think Ferrari will continue to do well. Although, if they're bringing an upgrade to sort out the porpoising, is that going to present them with a problem? Because, you know, we've seen them do so, so well with that horrendous porpoising. Are they just sorting that out for the comfort of the driver? And if so, is it going to make the car perform in a different way, which isn't the way they want it to? So I think it's going to be very interesting. And I think Mercedes as well, you know, George Russell is leading the Mercedes charge at the moment. Is this time for Hamilton to shine? Is it time that they brought an upgrade that's going to sort out their slowness issues on the main straights and sort out their issues in slower corners? We'll have to wait and see. It's going to be very exciting. So we're not here next week, but we are here the week after to review the Imola Grand Prix. Thanks very much, Scott. Have yourselves a great week and a half, and enjoy the Imola Grand Prix.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.